You're listening to From the Public Domain, short stories, excerpts, and essays from the public domain. I'm your host, Susie Alphins. Part 2 of The Good Anna by Gertrude Stein. On the day of their migration, Miss Mary had been already put into the carriage.
"Oh, Anna!" cried little Jane, running back into the house. "Miss Mary says that you are to bring along the blue dressings out of her room and mine."
Anna's body stiffened. "We never use them in the summer, Miss Jane," she said thickly.
"Yes, Anna, but Miss Mary thinks it would be nice, and she told me to tell you not to forget. Goodbye."
And the little girl skipped lightly down the steps into the carriage, and they drove away. Anna stood still on the steps, her eyes hard and sharp and shining, and her body and her face stiff with resentment. And then she went into the house, giving the door a shattering slam. Anna was very hard to live with in those next 3 days. Even Baby, the new puppy, the pride of Anna's heart, a present from her friend, the widow, Mrs. Lentman, even this pretty little black and tan felt the heat of Anna's scorching flame. And Edgar, who had looked forward to these days, to be for him, filled full of freedom and of things to eat. He could not rest a moment in Anna's bitter sight. On the third day, Anna and Edgar went to the Wadsworth country home. The blue dressings out of the two rooms remained behind. All the way, Edgar sat in front with a colored man and drove. It was an early spring day in the south. The fields and woods were heavy from the soaking rains. The horses dragged the carriage slowly over the long road, sticky with brown clay and rough with masses of stone thrown here and there to be broken and trodden into place by passing teams. Over and over through the soaking earth was the feathery new spring growth of little flowers, of young leaves and of ferns. The treetops were all bright with reds and yellows, with brilliant gleaming whites and gorgeous greens. All the lower air was full of the damp haze rising from heavy soaking water on the earth, mingled with a warm and pleasant smell from the blue smoke of the spring fires in all the open fields. And above all this was the clear upper air, and the songs of birds, and the joy of sunshine, and of lengthening days. The languor and the stir, the warmth and weight and the strong feel of life from the deep centers of the earth that comes always with the early soaking spring, when it is not answered with an active, fervent joy, gives always anger, irritation, and unrest. To Anna alone there in the carriage, drawing always nearer to the struggle with her mistress, the warmth, the slowness, the jolting over stones, the steaming from the horses, the cries of men and animals and birds, and the new life all round about were simply maddening.
"Baby, if you don't lie still, I think I kill you. I can't stand it any more like this."
At this time, Anna, about 27 years of age, was not yet all thin and worn. The sharp, bony edges and corners of her head and face were still rounded out with flesh. But already, the temper and the humor showed sharply in her clean blue eyes. And the thinning was begun about the lower jaw, that was so often strained with the upward pressure of resolve. Today, alone there in the carriage, she was all stiff and yet all trembling with the sore effort of decision and revolt. As the carriage turned into the Wadsmith gate, little Jane ran out to see. She just looked at Anna's face. She did not say a word about blue dressings. Anna got down from the carriage with little Baby in her arms. She took out all the goods that she had brought, and the carriage drove away. Anna left everything on the porch and went in to where Miss Mary Wadsmith was sitting by the fire. Miss Mary was sitting in a large armchair by the fire. All the nooks and crannies of the chair were filled full of her soft and spreading body. She was dressed in a black satin morning gown. The sleeves, great monster things, were heavy with the mass of her soft flesh. She sat there always, large, helpless, gentle. She had a fair, soft, regular, good-looking face with pleasant, empty, gray-blue eyes and heavy, sleepy lids. Behind Miss Mary was the little Jane, nervous and jerky with excitement as she saw Anna come into the room.
"Miss Mary," Anna began.
she had stopped just within the door, her body and her face stiff with repression. Her teeth closed hard, and the white lights flashing sharply in the pale, clean blue of her eyes. Her bearing was full of the strange coquetry of anger and of fear, the stiffness, the bridling, the suggestive movement underneath, the rigidness of forced control, all the queer ways the passions have to show themselves all one. Miss Mary. The words came slowly, with thick utterance and with jerks, but always firm and strong. Miss Mary. I can't stand it any more like this. When you tell me anything to do, I do it. I do everything I can, and you know I work myself sick for you. The blue dressings in your room makes too much work to have for summer. Miss Jane don't know what work is. If you want to do things like that, I go away. Anna stopped still. Her words had not the strength of meaning they were meant to have, but the power in the mood of Anna's soul frightened and awed Miss Mary through and through. Like in all large and helpless women, Miss Mary's heart beat weakly in the soft and helpless mass it had to govern. Little Jane's excitements had already tried her strength. Now she drew Dale, fainted quite away. "Miss Mary!" cried Anna, running to her mistress and supporting all her helpless weight back in the chair. Little Jane, distracted, flew about as Anna ordered, bringing smelling salts and brandy and vinegar and water and chafing poor Miss Mary's wrists. Miss Mary slowly opened her mild eyes. Anna sent the weeping little Jane out of the room. She herself managed to get Miss Mary quiet on the couch. There was never a word more said about the blue dressings. Anna had conquered, and a few days later, little Jane gave her a green parrot to make peace. For 6 more years, little Jane and Anna lived in the same house. They were careful and respectful to each other to the end. Anna liked the parrot very well. She was fond of cats, too, and of horses. But best of all animals, she loved the dog, and best of all dogs, little baby, the first gift from her friend, the widow Mrs. Lentman. The widow Mrs. Lentman was the romance in Anna's life. Anna met her first at the house of her half-brother, the baker, who had known the late Mr. Lentman, a small grocer, very well. Mrs. Lentman had been, for years, a midwife. Since her husband's death, she had herself and 2 young children to support. Mrs. Lentman was a good-looking woman. She had a plump, well-rounded body, clear olive skin, bright dark eyes, and crisp, black, curling hair. She was pleasant, magnetic, efficient, and good. She was very attractive, very generous, and very amiable. She was a few years older than our good Anna, who was soon entirely subdued by her magnetic, sympathetic charm. Mrs. Lentman, in her work, loved best to deliver young girls who were in trouble. She would take these into her own house and care for them in secret, till they could guiltlessly go home or back to work, and then slowly pay her the money for their care. And so through this new friend, Anna led a wider and more entertaining life. And often she used up her savings in helping Mrs. Lentman through those times when she was giving very much more than she got. It was through Mrs. Lentman that Anna met Dr. Sonjin, who employed her when at last it had to be that she must go away from her Miss Mary Wadsmith. During the last years with her Miss Mary, Anna's health was very bad, as indeed it always was from that time on until the end of her strong life. Anna was a medium-sized, thin, hard-working, worrying woman. She had always had bad headaches, and now they came more often and more wearing. Her face grew thin, more bony, and more worn. Her skin stained itself pale yellow, as it does with working, sickly women, and the clear blue of her eyes went pale. Her back troubled her a good deal, too. She was always tired at her work, and her temper grew more difficult and fretful. Miss Mary Wadsmith often tried to make Anna see a little to herself and get a doctor, and the little Jane, now blossoming into a pretty, sweet young woman, did her best to make Anna do things for her good. Anna was stubborn always to Miss Jane and fearful of interference in her ways. Miss Mary Wadsmith's mild advice she could easily always turn aside. Mrs. Lentman was the only one who had any power over Anna. She induced her to let Dr. Sonjin take her in his care. No one but a Dr. Sonjin could have brought a good and German Anna first to stop her work and then submit herself to operation. But he knew so well how to deal with German and poor people. Cheery, jovial, hearty, full of jokes that made much fun, and yet were full of simple common sense and reasoning courage. He could persuade even a good Anna to do things that were for her own good. Edgar had now been for some years away from home, first at a school and then at a work, to prepare himself to be a civil engineer. Miss Mary and Jane promised to take a trip for all the time that Anna was away, and so there would be no need for Anna's work, nor for a new girl to take Anna's place. Anna's mind was thus a little set at rest. She gave herself to Mrs. Lindman and the doctor to do what they thought best and make her well and strong. Anna endured the operation very well and was patient, almost docile, in the slow recovery of her working strength. But when she was once more at work for her Miss Mary Wadsmith, all the good effect of these several months of rest were soon worked and worried well away. For all the rest of her strong working life, Anna was never really well. She had bad headaches all the time, and she was always thin and worn. She worked away her appetite, her health, and strength, and always for the sake of those who begged her not to work so hard. To her thinking, in her stubborn, faithful German soul, this was the right way for a girl to do. Anna's life with Miss Mary Wadsmith was now drawing to an end. Miss Jane, now altogether a young lady, had come out into the world. Soon she would become engaged and then be married. And then, perhaps, Miss Mary Wadsmith would make her home with her. In such a household, Anna was certain that she would never take a place. Miss Jane was always careful and respectful and very good to Anna, but never could Anna be a girl in a household where Miss Jane would be the head. This much was very certain in her mind, and so these last 2 years with her Miss Mary were not as happy as before. The change came very soon. Miss Jane became engaged, and in a few months was to marry a man from out of town, from Curden, an hour's railway ride from Bridgepoint. Poor Miss Mary Wadsmith did not know the strong resolve Anna had made to live apart from her when this new household should be formed. Anna found it very hard to speak to her Miss Mary of this change. The preparations for the wedding went on day and night. Anna worked and sewed hard to make it all go well. Miss Mary was much fluttered, but content and happy with Anna to make everything so easy for them all. Anna worked so all the time to drown her sorrow and her conscience, too. For somehow, it was not right to leave Miss Mary so. But what else could she do? She could not live as her Miss Mary's girl in a house where Miss Jane would be the head. The wedding day grew always nearer. At last it came and passed. The young people went on their wedding trip, and Anna and Miss Mary were left behind to pack up all the things. Yet even poor Anna had not had the strength to tell Miss Mary her resolve, but now it had to be. Anna, every spare minute, ran to her friend Mrs. Lindman for comfort and advice. She begged her friend to be with her when she told the news to Miss Mary. Perhaps if Mrs. Lindman had not been in Bridgepoint, Anna would have tried to live in the new house. Mrs. Lindman did not urge her to this thing, nor even give her this advice. But feeling for Mrs. Lindman, as she did, made even faithful Anna not quite so strong in her dependence on Miss Mary's need as she would otherwise have been. Remember, Mrs. Lindman was the romance in Anna's life. All the packing was now done, and in a few days Miss Mary was to go to the new house, where the young people were ready for her coming. At last Anna had to speak. Mrs. Lindman agreed to go with her and help to make the matter clear to poor Miss Mary. The two women came together to Miss Mary Wadsmith, sitting placid by the fire in the empty living room. Miss Mary had seen Mrs. Lindman many times before, and so her coming in with Anna raised no suspicion in her mind. It was very hard for the two women to begin. It must be very gently done, this telling to Miss Mary of the change. She must not be shocked by suddenness or with excitement. Anna was all stiff, and inside all a quiver with shame, anxiety, and grief. Even courageous Mrs. Lindman, efficient, impulsive, and complacent as she was, and not deeply concerned in the event, felt awkward, abashed, and almost guilty in that large, mild, helpless presence. And at her side, to make her feel the power of it all, was the intense conviction of poor Anna, struggling to be unfeeling, self-righteous, and suppressed. Miss Mary. With Anna, when things had to come, they came always sharp and short. Miss Mary. Mrs. Lentman has come here with me, so I can tell you about not staying with you there in Curtin. Of course, I go help you to get settled, and then I think I come back and stay right here in Bridgepoint. You know my brother. He is here, and all his family, and I think it would be not right to go away from them so far. And you know, you don't want me now so much, Miss Mary, when you are all together there in Curtin. Miss Mary Wadsmith was puzzled. She did not understand what Anna meant by what she said. Why, Anna, of course you can come to see your brother whenever you like to, and I will always pay your fare. I thought you understood all about that. And we will be very glad to have your nieces come to stay with you as often as they like. There will always be room enough in a big house like Mr. Goldthwaite's. It was now for Mrs. Lentman to begin her work. Miss Wadsmith does not understand just what you mean, Anna, she began. Miss Wadsmith, Anna feels how good and kind you are, and she talks about it all the time, and what you do for her in every way you can. And she is very grateful and never would want to go away from you. Only she thinks it would be better now that Mrs. Goldthwaite has this big new house and will want to manage it in her own way. She thinks perhaps it would be better if Mrs. Goldthwaite had all new servants with her to begin with and not a girl like Anna, who knew her when she was a little girl. That is what Anna feels about it now, and she asked me, and I said to her that I thought it would be better for you all, and you knew she liked you so much, and that you were so good to her, and you would understand how she thought it would be better in the new house if she stayed on here in Bridgepoint, anyway for a little while, until Mrs. Goldthwaite was used to her new house. Isn't that it, Anna, that you wanted Mrs. Wadsmith to know? Oh, Anna. Miss Mary Wadsmith said it slowly, and in a grieved tone of surprise that was very hard for the good Anna to endure. Oh, Anna, I didn't think that you would ever want to leave me after all these years. Miss Mary, it came in one tense, jerky burst. Miss Mary, it's only working under Miss Jane now would make me leave you so. I know how good you are, and I work myself sick for you and for Mr. Edgar and for Miss Jane, too. Only Miss Jane, she will want everything different from, like, the way we always did. And you knew, Miss Mary, I can't have Miss Jane watching me all the time and every minute something new. Miss Mary, it would be very bad, and Miss Jane don't really want me to come with you to the new house. I know that all the time. Please, Miss Mary, don't feel bad about it or think I ever want to go away from you. If I could do things right for you the way they ought to be. Poor Miss Mary. Struggling was not a thing for her to do. Anna would surely yield if she would struggle, but struggling was too much work and too much worry for peaceful Miss Mary to endure. If Anna would do so, she must. Poor Miss Mary Wadsmith sighed, looked wistfully at Anna, and then gave it up. You must do as you think best, Anna, she said, at last letting all of her soft self sink back into the chair. I am very sorry, and so I am sure will be Miss Jane when she hears what you have thought it best to do. It was very good of Mrs. Lentman to come with you, and I am sure she does it for your good. I suppose you want to go out a little now. Come back in an hour, Anna, and help me go to bed. Miss Mary closed her eyes and rested still and placid by the fire. The two women went away. This was the end of Anna's service with Miss Mary Wadsmith, and soon her new life taking care of Dr. Sonjan was begun. Keeping house for a jovial bachelor doctor gave new elements of understanding to Anna's maiden German mind. Her habits were as firm fixed as before, but it always was with Anna that things had been done once with her enjoyment and consent could always happen any time again, such as her getting up at any hour of the night to make a supper and cook hot chops and chicken fry for Dr. Sonjan and his bachelor friends. Anna loved to work for men, for they could eat so much and with such joy. And when they were warm and full, they were content and let her do whatever she thought best. Not that Anna's conscience ever slept, for neither with interference or without would she strain less to keep on saving every cent and working every hour of the day. But truly, she loved it best when she could scold. Now, it was not only other girls and the colored man and the dogs and cats and horses and her parrot, but her cheery master, jolly Dr. Songjin, whom she could guide and constantly rebuke to his own good. The doctor really loved her scoldings as she loved his wickednesses and his merry joking ways. These days were happy days with Anna. Her freakish humor now first showed itself, her sense of fun in the queer ways that people had, that made her later find delight in brutish, servile Katie, in Sally's silly ways, and in the badness of Peter and of Rags. She loved to make sport with the skeletons the doctor had, to make them move and make strange noises, till the Negro boy shook in his shoes and his eyes rolled white in his agony of fear. Then Anna would tell these histories to her doctor. Her worn, thin, lined, determined face would form for itself new and humorous creases. And her pale blue eyes would kindle with humor and with joy as her doctor burst into his hearty laugh. And the good Anna, full of the coquetry of pleasing, would bridle with her angular, thin, spinster body, straining her stories and herself to please. These early days with jovial Dr. Songjin were very happy days with the good Anna. All of Anna's spare hours in these early days she spent with her friend, the widow Mrs. Lentman. Mrs. Lentman lived with her two children in a small house in the same part of the town as Dr. Songjin. The older of these two children was a girl named Julia, and was now about 13 years of age. This Julia Lentman was an unattractive girl enough, harsh-featured, dull, and stubborn, as had been her heavy German father. Mrs. Lentman did not trouble much with her, but gave her always all she wanted that she had, and let the girl do as she liked. This was not from indifference or dislike on the part of Mrs. Lentman. It was just her usual way. Her second child was a boy, 2 years younger than his sister, a bright, pleasant, cheery fellow, who, too, did what he liked with his money and his time. All this was so with Mrs. Lentman, because she had so much in her head and in her house that clamored for her concentration and her time. This slackness and neglect in the running of the house, and the indifference in this mother for the training of her young, was very hard for our good Anna to endure. Of course, she did her best to scold, to save for Mrs. Lentman, and to put things in their place the way they ought to be. Even in the early days when Anna was first won by the glamour of Mrs. Lentman's brilliancy and charm, she had been uneasy in Mrs. Lentman's house with a need of putting things to rights. Now that the two children growing up were of more importance in the house, and now that long acquaintance had brushed the dazzle out of Anna's eyes, she began to struggle to make things go here as she thought was right. She watched and scolded hard these days to make young Julia do the way she should. Not that Julia Lentman was pleasant in the good Anna's sight, but it must never be that a young girl growing up should have no one to make her learn to do things right. The boy was easier to scold, for scoldings never sank in very deep, and indeed he liked them very well. For they brought with them new things to eat, and lively teasing, and good jokes. Julia, the girl, grew very sullen with it all, and very often won her point. For after all, Miss Annie was no relative of hers, and had no business coming there and making trouble all the time. Appealing to the mother was no use. It was wonderful how Mrs. Lentman could listen and not hear, could answer and yet not decide, could say and do what she was asked, and yet leave things as they were before. One day, it got almost too bad for even Anna's friendship to bear out. "Well, Julia, is your mama out?" Anna asked one Sunday summer afternoon as she came into the Lentman house. Anna looked very well this day. She was always careful in her dress and sparing of new clothes. She made herself always fulfill her own ideal of how a girl should look when she took her Sundays out. Anna knew so well the kind of ugliness appropriate to each rank in life. It was interesting to see how when she bought things for Miss Wadsmith, and later for her cherished Miss Matilda, and always entirely from her own taste and often as cheaply as she bought things for her friends or for herself, that on the one hand, She chose the things having the right air for a member of the upper class, and for the others, always the things having the awkward ugliness that we call Dutch. She knew the best things in each kind, and she never, in the course of her strong life, compromised her sense of what was the right thing for a girl to wear. On this bright summer Sunday afternoon, she came to the Lintmans, much dressed up in her new, brick-red, silk waist trimmed with broad black beaded braid, a dark cloth skirt, and a new stiff, shiny black straw hat, trimmed with colored ribbons and a bird. She had on new gloves and a feather boa about her neck. Her spare, thin, awkward body and her worn pale yellow face, though lit up now with a pleasant summer sun, made a queer discord with the brightness of her clothes. She came to the Lintman house, where she had not been for several days, and opening the door that is always left unlatched in the houses of the lower middle class in the pleasant cities of the South, she found Julia in the family sitting room, alone.
"Well, Julia, where is your mama?" Anna asked.
"Ma is out, but come in, Miss Annie, and look at our new brother."
"What you talk so foolish for, Julia?" said Anna, sitting down.
"I ain't talking foolish, Miss Annie. Didn't you know Mama has just adopted a cute, nice little baby boy?"
"You talk so crazy, Julia. You ought to know better than to say such things."
Julia turned sullen.
"All right, Miss Annie. You don't need to believe what I say. But the little baby is in the kitchen, and Ma will tell you herself when she comes in."
It sounded most fantastic, but Julia had an air of truth, and Mrs. Lintman was capable of doing stranger things. Anna was disturbed.
"What you mean, Julia?" she said.
"I don't mean nothing, Miss Annie. You don't believe the baby is in there? Well, you can go and see it for yourself."
Anna went into the kitchen. A baby was there all right enough, and a lusty little boy he seemed. He was very tight asleep in a basket that stood in the corner by the open door.
"You mean your mama is just letting him stay here a little while," Anna said to Julia, who had followed her into the kitchen to see Miss Annie get real mad.
"No, that ain't it, Miss Annie. The mother was that girl, Lily, that came from Bishop's place out in the country, and she don't want no children. And Ma liked the little boy so much. She said she'd keep him here and adopt him for her own child."
Anna, for once, was fairly dumb with astonishment and rage. The front door slammed.
"There's Ma now," cried Julia in an uneasy triumph,
for she was not quite certain in her mind which side of the question she was on.
"There's Ma now, and you can ask her for yourself if I ain't told you true."
Mrs. Lintman came into the kitchen where they were. She was bland, impersonal, and pleasant, as it was her wont to be. Still today, though this her usual manner that gave her such success in her practice as a midwife, there shone an uneasy consciousness of guilt. For like all who had to do with the good Anna, Mrs. Lintman dreaded her firm character, her vigorous judgments, and the bitter fervor of her tongue. To be continued. You've been listening to From the Public Domain. Today's selections were read by Susie Alphons. This is your host, Susie Alphons.